Topic 74, Humanity. 1. The world is one world, and its sufferings are one. Humanity is in truth a unity, but many are still unaware of this, and the whole trend of the present teaching is directed to the awakening of humanity to this, while there is yet time to avert still more serious conditions. The sins of humanity are also one, its goal is one, and it is as one great human family that we must emerge into the future. I would emphasize this thought. It is as one humanity, chastened, disciplined, but illumined and fused, that we must emerge into the future. Those who do not grasp this important fact, whether they are what is called belligerents or neutrals, will suffer deeply as a result of their non-participation in the fate of the whole. The hierarchy is not neutral. It is one with the right element in every nation and set against all separative, isolationist, and materialistic attitudes. Such attitudes prevent the apprehension of the true spiritual values and hinder human development, identification with all, and participation in world conditions voluntarily and not from force is the way out today for all peoples. Ponder on this. From The Destiny of Nations, page 65. 2. The long foreordained work of humanity is to be the distributing agency for spiritual energy to the three subhuman kingdoms. This is the major task of service which the fourth kingdom, through its incarnating souls, has undertaken. The radiation from the fourth kingdom will someday be so potent and far-reaching that its effects will permeate down into the very depths of the created phenomenal world, even into the mineral kingdom. From The Destiny of Nations, page 124. 3. The objective of the new social order, of the new politics, and the new religion is to bring about the unfoldment of the human consciousness, to institute and bring to men's attention the higher values, and to end the reign of materialism. It is, after all, the goal which all true knowers and spiritually minded men down the ages have set themselves, to bring in the rule of the kingdom of God, the control of the soul, whose nature is love, and to carry forward the work which Christ inaugurated, the era of peace on earth, goodwill towards men. This is plainly indicated by the widespread emphasis upon world peace, as voiced by the great political leaders and as worked for by the churches everywhere. The peoples of the world today are divided into four groups from the angle of those who are seeking to guide humanity into the new age. This is, of course, a wide generalization, and there are many bridging groups between the four major divisions. First, the ignorant masses. These, through poverty, lack of employment, illiteracy, hunger, distress, and no leisure or means for cultural advantages, are in an inflamed condition. They are developed just enough to respond to the mental control and suggestion of slightly more advanced people. They can be easily regimented, influenced, standardized, and swept into a collective activity by leaders of any school of thought which is clever enough and emotional enough to appeal to the material desires, to love of country, and to hatred of those who possess more than they do. They can be controlled by fear and thus aroused to action by emotional appeal. Knowing no better and suffering so much, they are easily swept by the fires of hatred and fanaticism, and so they constitute one of the greatest and most innocent menaces of the present time. They are the playthings of the better informed, and are helpless in the hands of those who seek to use them for any purpose whatsoever. They can be reached most easily by emotional appeals and by promises, whereas ideas can make but little impact upon their consciousness, for they are not yet developed enough to do their own thinking. The bulk of them are young souls, though there are exceptions naturally. It is not the idealism of the leaders and demagogues which impresses them and impels them into action, usually of a violent nature, but the desire to retaliate, the longing to possess in the material sense, and the determination to be what is colloquially called the top dog. They embody mob psychology, mob rule, and mob violence. They are helpless, exploited, and because they are an unthinking, unreasonable mass of human beings, they present a very real problem, as we all well know, and all governments well realize. Blind, unthinking violence has hitherto been met by armed force. Such is the case today. The masses fight and die on the urge of inflammatory speeches and seldom know what it is all about. Their conditions must be bettered, but not through bloodshed and exploitation. Secondly, the middle classes, so-called, both higher and lower. These are the bulk of the nations, the bourgeoisie, intelligent, diligent, inquiring, narrow-minded, essentially religious, though frequently repudiating the forms of religion. They are torn and devastated by the economic conflict, and are without exception the most powerful element in any nation because of their capacity to read, to discuss, to think, to spend money, and to take sides. They form the bulk of the partisans in the world, the fighters for a cause, and are formed into great groups either for or against this, that, or the other party. They love to recognize and choose a leader, and are ready to die for a cause and to make endless sacrifices for their ideals, based upon the ideas presented to them by their chosen leaders. I am not differentiating the so-called aristocracy into a group, because that is entirely a class distinction, based largely on heredity and capital, and the modern adjustments in nations are rapidly fusing them into a large middle class. We are dealing with basic matters, with the groupings which are founded on major attitudes and not on divisions which emerge when material resources are under consideration. The bourgeois mind is today slowly and steadily permeating the masses, the proletariat, and it is also penetrating into that circle which has hitherto been called the upper classes. It is found existing as a state of consciousness in the aristocracy of any nation, and absorbing them under the great present leveling process. Because of this leveling which is everywhere going on, the spiritual aristocracy can now emerge, an aristocracy based on a realization of divine origin and goal, which knows no class distinction and no separating differences. It is therefore dealing with human divisions and not class distinctions. This second group is the most fruitful field from which the new leaders and organizers are being drawn. They constitute an intermediate group between the world thinkers, the intelligentsia, and the masses of men. In the last analysis, they are the determining factor in world affairs. The masses suffer from world conditions and from the situations brought about through the activity of this second group as it responds in some way or another to the new influences, the new ideals, and the new controlling factors in the modern world. This great second group itself suffers at the hands of those who seek to impose the new rhythms upon the peoples, the political groups, the religious idealists and fanatics, and the protagonists of the new social order and economic regimes, as interpreted to them rightly or wrongly by their leaders. Because of their intelligence, due to the improving educational facilities, the ability to read, and the impact of the new methods of propaganda, the press and the radio, they provide the most powerful group in the world in each nation, and it is to them that the leaders make their appeal, and it is their backing and their partisanship which is demanded, and which means success to any leader. They are the ones who have the controlling vote in national affairs. They are today swept by uncertainty, by questioning, by deep-seated fears, and by the desire to see justice done and the new order of things established. Above everything else, they desire peace, stable economic conditions, and an orderly world. For this they are ready to fight, and are today fighting in every party, every group, and for every kind of political, nationalistic, religious, economic, and social ideals. If they are not literally fighting in the physical sense, they are fighting with words, speeches, and books. This is a continuation of Topic 74, Humanity. Third, the thinkers of the world. These are the intelligent and highly educated men and women who sense ideas and formulate them into ideals. These people speak the words, write the articles and books, and utilize all the known methods to reach and educate the general public and thus stir up the bourgeoisie to activity and arouse through them the masses. Their function and the part they play is of supreme importance. From their ranks come those who are steadily influencing the trend of world affairs, sometimes for good and sometimes for selfish ends. They play upon the human mind as a musician plays upon his instrument, and the power of the press, of the radio, and of the public platforms is in their hands. Their responsibility is enormous. Some few, perhaps more than might appear, are working selflessly under the inspiration of the new era. They are dedicated to the amelioration of human conditions and the betterment of world affairs along certain lines, which seem to them, rightly or wrongly, to have in them the hope of the future and the uplift of humanity. They are found in every government, party, society, and organization, and in every church and religious grouping. They constitute the most influential unit today, because it is through them that the large middle class is reached, swayed, and organized for political, religious, and social ends. Their ideas and utterances percolate down through the upper and middle classes and finally reach the ears of the more advanced of the undeveloped masses. Fourth, the new group of world servers. These are the people who are beginning to form a new social order in the world. They belong to no party or government, in the partisan sense. They recognize all parties, all creeds, and all social and economic organizations. They recognize all governments. They are found in all nations and all religious organizations, and are occupied with the formulation of the new social order. From the purely physical angle, they are not fighting either for the best in the old order or for the betterment of world conditions. They consider that the old methods of fighting and partisanship and attack and the ancient techniques of party battle have utterly failed, and that the means hitherto employed on all sides and by all parties and groups, fighting, violent partisanship of a leader or a cause, attacks on individuals whose ideas or manner of living is deemed detrimental to mankind, are out of date, having proved futile and unsuitable to bring in the desired condition of peace, economic plenty, and understanding. They are occupied with the task of inaugurating the new world order by forming throughout the world, in every nation, city, and town, a grouping of people who belong to no party, take no sides either for or against, but who have as clear and definite a platform and as practical a program as any other single party in the world today. They take their stand upon the essential divinity of man. Their program is founded upon goodwill, because it is a basic human characteristic. They are therefore organizing the men of goodwill throughout the world at this time, outlining to them a definite program and laying down a platform upon which all men of goodwill can meet. They state and believe that their initial appeal has been of such a nature that, given the assistance of the trained minds to be found in the third group outlined above, and given the needed financial assistance to do the required educational work and goodwill propaganda, they can so change the world through the sole agency of the men of goodwill that without war, without arousing hatred between men, and without attacking any cause or giving partisanship to any cause, the new order can be firmly established upon earth. from A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 2, Esoteric Psychology 2, pages 632 through 637. 4. The consciousness of humanity is awakened everywhere. The most undeveloped races are in process of achieving education, involving necessarily the discovery of the mind. Goodwill is being recognized as necessary to world unfoldment, and men are finding that no man liveth unto himself, or any nation either. They are registering the fact that it is simply common sense and the part of wisdom to better conditions for all men everywhere. This is a new attitude and a fresh and most hopeful approach. Men are learning to know and understand each other. Nations are arriving at a closer contact with one another. Statesmen of all nations are wrestling together and in joint conclave with the problem of bettering human living conditions. Everywhere there is thought, there is appraisal, and there is the struggle for freedom and for the truer values. What is all this but the effort of the soul of humanity to kill out disease, restore unhealthy areas to health, and eliminate points of friction? Is not this what the spiritual man who is ill is seeking to bring about in his own body, and what the healer is attempting to aid him to do? From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 4, Esoteric Healing, pages 610 through 611. 5. Humanity is sick and awaiting healing. The healing will be brought about through the medium of the new group of world servers and by the men of goodwill, aided by the hierarchy, from which the planetary center, the healing energies, will be drawn. The sickness of humanity as a race, and as a result of eons of wrong living, of selfish purpose, and of greed, has produced a mass of physical ills. Today millions of children are born, either openly diseased or with the seed of disease in them. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 4, Esoteric Healing, page 663. 6. The race as a whole stands now at the very entrance to the path of discipleship. The racial gaze is forward to the vision, whether it is the vision of the soul, a vision of a better life, of an improved economic situation, or of better interrelational relationships. That this vision is oft distorted, that it is materially oriented or only partially seen, is sadly true. But in some form or another, there exists today an appreciable grasp of the new and desirable by the masses, a thing hitherto unknown. In the past, it was the intelligentsia or the elect who were privileged to have the vision. Today, it is the mass of men. Humanity, therefore, as a whole, stands ready for a general alignment process, and that is the spiritual reason which lay behind the world war. Quote, "The sharp shears of sorrow must separate the real from the unreal. The lash of pain must awaken the sleepy soul to exquisite life. The wrenching away of the roots of life from the soul of selfish desire must be undergone, and then the man stands free." Unquote. So runs the old commentary in one of its more mystical stanzas. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 5, The Rays and the Initiations, pages 498 through 499.